Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is one of the biggest names in British comedy. Born in Port Talbot, he is by every stretch a true Welsh success story, studying at the Welsh College of Music and Drama before dropping out to pursue a career at BBC Radio Wales, where he worked for 6 years as a DJ on air, dropping in some very early forms of his soon-to-be iconic comedy character, Keith Barrett, live on air. A taster tape of the character landed on the desk of Steve Coogan at the production company he runs, and a huge television career was born with the award-winning Marion and Jeff, its spin-off show, The Keith Barrett Show, and of course Human Remains, which he co-wrote and starred in alongside Julia Davis. From there, things snowballed with roles in everything from Little Britain to 24-hour Party People, until his school friend Ruth Jones came knocking with a little BBC-backed sitcom called Gavin and Stacey. As Barry Island's Uncle Bryn, he won the hearts of the nation and also nabbed a UK number one single in 2009 with his and Ruth's cover of Islands in the Stream for Comic Relief. In the years that followed, he's hosted huge panel shows like I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue and Would I Lie to You, as well as several series of the critically acclaimed comedy drama The Trip opposite Steve Coogan. These days, if he's not touring the country for an evening of music and laughter with his very own band, he's also recording his own podcast, Bryden And, where he talks to some of the biggest names in the business, only on Spotify. I know this is an extraordinarily long intro, but boy, has he packed in a life well lived. I'm talking to Rob the night before we're due to meet up at Carfest, a brilliant festival we're both attending, which is organised every year by Chris Evans to raise money for children's charities. Tickets for next year's event are already on sale now. There, I've encouraged you to come and join us because, as you're about to hear, you're in for a treat. Who else could it be but Rob Bryden? Let's dial him up, shall we?
Wow, that introduction is longer than some of my podcasts.
I know.
It is nice to hear it all laid out like that. How are you? Nice to see you.
I'm really good. I mean, when you hear it back like that, does it make you feel a bit tired and like you need to lie down?
Well, it's always funny, you know, when you hear an introduction, what people choose to say, you know, the bits that they do pick out, and always say Gavin and Stacey, obviously, but say you mentioned the Keith Barrett Show, that never gets mentioned, so it's always nice. No, not really, not in this situation. So it's quite nice in the same way that, you know, when someone comes up to you in the streets to say they like something, it's always lovely if it's one of the more obscure things, you know, if it's something that you think people just don't remember. That's always nicer, really, than the other ones.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's some beautiful work in there, Marion and Jeff and Human Remains. I mean, just beautiful. If you put those out now, they'd still receive, I think, the same support, love and audience attention.
Yeah, they're very strong. I mean, they were done with, you know, two brilliant people. So Marion and Jeff was done with Hugo Blick, who is super talented. And you said about, you know, Julia, for goodness sake. And I think I am at my best working with someone else, working with another really strong person. If only from a motivation point of view, I'm driven in a way, but not, you know, not in another way. I can't think of, is it micro or macro? I don't know. But I'm better when I've got someone else around me, and I really, you know, got lucky with them. And yeah, I think they do stand up, and they're over 20 years old now.
So in other words, classic.
I'll take that.
It seems very strange, Rob, that you and I are talking today, and yet tomorrow night we will possibly be camping alongside one another at this year's Car Fest.
Yes, I'm glad you qualified that with Car Fest. you know how easily rumours start, Kate.
Exactly what I was intending.
Yes, we will be snuggling down in our respective bell tents. At Car Fest, Chris Evans' festival, which I'd never been to a festival, that won't surprise you. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, because there was a gap, wasn't there, for the pandemic. So maybe it was 4 years ago. Chris said, you know, come to this. And I was going to sing a song with, they have the band there, which is basically The Feeling. And people come on and sing with them. So I said, oh, yeah. So then I did Islands in the Stream with Sophie Ellis-Bextor. That was the idea. And I also got, yeah, and I got interviewed by Chris, la, la, la. And that first year, one of the funniest things was that, you know what Chris is like. He's a force of nature. But he'd been doing so much that he'd literally lost his voice. So I had to step in for him. So I ended up hosting an interview, which I hadn't planned to do, with Rick Astley and Ricky Wilson. That was great because, you know, I mean, because I've been around so long, and like you said, I started out in radio, I find things like that, you know, pretty damn easy. I mean, you know, it doesn't faze me. So I did that, and we sort of became friends of the festival, and it's, you'll love it. It's a family thing. There's such a great atmosphere. We have another couple of families that come down as well, and we have a great time, is what I'm saying. And this will be the third year. We've kept going back.
Well, already I'm feeling the family effect of it, because one of the other guests that has very kindly come on the show that's going to be there this weekend is Adam Woodyer. And as it transpired when I interviewed Adam for this podcast, is he now lives in a motorhome. And not sure if you're aware of this, Rob. You'll see it tomorrow night. He's going to roar into camping. Yeah. His super duper German motorhome, right, that he bought to go on tour with. Anyway, it turns out he's camping up the road from me. So I get a call from Adam, like 3 weeks after the podcast, saying, could I ask you a favour? I'm not joking, Rob. The seats are down in my car because tomorrow I am driving his sales board and menus and some flags for his food van to Carfest.
What, he's selling food? What, is that something that Adam was doing anyway? Or is this something
well,
that
he loves
Chris
a bit of,
do?
Well, a bit of both, I think. You know, he's done MasterChef, obviously, around for years, and here he is doing a vegan food stand. I only know this because I've got all his flags and his menu in my car.
Oh, that'll be funny. I've only met him once. He came on, in all the years, he came on Would I Lie to You, and that's the only time I've ever spent any time with him. You know, there's some people you keep running into, and then there are other people you sort of essentially inhabit the same world, but you never encounter them. It's the strangest thing.
I'll tell you what, the few people that you have encountered have made up what I can only describe as a treasure trove of a guest list for your podcast, which is available on Spotify. And I have rabbit holed. I am well and truly in your rabbit hole, Rob. What an incredible lineup of people you've spoken to. Chris Martin, Noel Gallagher, Kenneth Branagh. Matthew McFadden, Michael Sheen. I mean, the list goes on. It's amazing.
Well, they're mostly, certainly at the beginning, people that I knew or I'd worked with. I'd all those people you mentioned I worked with, even Chris Martin in an odd way, because I've done a couple of things with him where, well, twice now I've sung with Coldplay. Once was at a Christmas benefit at the O2, and I was going there to do some stand-up, and then I got a message, or Chris would, I'd never met him, I don't think I had, anyway. Chris wants to say hi in his dressing room, so I went to the dressing room, which was, you know, full of drapes and candles, as you would expect. And I mean, it was a fire waiting to happen. And he said, because it was Christmas, he said, do you want to come up and do a Christmas song with me? And I said, well, yeah, okay. So I ended up at the O2 going up onto the thrust of the stage, you know, where just his little piano comes up on its own. And I think we'd had the briefest of rehearsals. And I didn't do it very well, not mock modesty, I genuinely didn't. It's on YouTube if people want to judge for themselves. Anyway, we did that. But the better time was then some years later, Coldplay were playing at the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff. And we'd already bought tickets. My family and my best friend's family, who lives in Cardiff, we were all going to go. And I was in my dressing room at Would I Lie to You one day, and I got an email from Chris saying, would you like to come out at the end of the show and sing the Welsh National Anthem? And now, I don't speak Welsh. I know some of the Welsh National Anthem. I don't know it all. It's a shameful admission. And so I wrote by saying, oh, sorry, Chris, I don't know. And then I said to my wife, oh, Chris Martin, you know, and I said, and she said, what? You said no, what are you doing? And he said, and then Chris said, oh, well, look, don't worry, we'll have it. It'll be on a screen and everything, you know. So I said, oh, okay. So then we had the most incredible experience of driving down there, and before the show, meeting up with him, who by now I had met a few times. And me and my wife and my best mate and his wife have dinner with Chris in his kind of room. And he was, as you know, as lovely and as positive and this beacon of energy and positivity and all this stuff. And we sat there and ate very, very healthy dinner. Then I went off into a room with him and the rest of the band. And we messed around and went through the song once and diddly dee. And then we go, and then he has to go and get ready for the show. And then we go and sit down. Now, only one of my kids, I got five kids, only one of them knew that I was going to sing with him. So for the rest, it was a surprise. And they'd said, what we'll do is we'll come and get you towards the end of the show. So at some point I see the person coming to us, and I said, oh, I was going to go to the loo. So off I went. And then, this is a ludicrously long story, Kate.
You can oh, I love it.
As you wish. So I get taken all around the stadium, underneath the stage, of course, and I get given these things I'm wearing now, these in-ear monitors, which I'm not very familiar with. And these give you a feed of your voice and a feed of the band, as opposed to a wedge monitor, which is traditionally when you look at, you know this, I'm telling this for the listener, when you see people in the 70s on the stage and so on. Anyway, can you hear the band? Yes. Can you hear yourself? Yes. Marvellous. Good. I'm a little bit nervous because I'm out of my comfort zone. I think there were 76,000 people there, give or take a dozen. So we get to the bit, and I can hear him on stage, and he says, now we've got a surprise for you. And they go, hey, we've got someone coming out. And he's got the most amazing voice. I thought, well, okay. He said, in fact, this guy's the best voice in the world. I thought, steady on. And he said, and he's Welsh. So now, obviously, everybody is hoping and praying that it's Tom Jones.
Of course, it's got to be Tom.
Got to be Tom Jones. So I'm thinking, oh, Chris, for God's sake, rein it in. Then he said, in fact, he's not just one voice. I think he's a Swiss Army knife of voices. I thought, oh, well, okay, that's a bit more like
nice, me. I like that.
And he said, ladies and gentlemen, it's Rob Brydon. Now, in my ears, I had a feed of me and the band, but I didn't have a feed of the room or the stadium. So in my ears, it sounded like he'd said, "Ladies and Rob Brydon," and it was met with tumbleweed and silence. So I have to walk out onto the stage, exuding confidence, while thinking, oh my God, they hate me. And I'm smiling at Chris. And it was amazing. And yeah, and we sang it and all was well. So yes, the people, most of the people at the beginning were people I'd worked with. And then as it's gone on and on and on and on, I've had a few now, people that I've never met, one or two whose work I've never seen.
You're going to do my idea, which is a lot of research, right?
Oh, well, no, I don't know. I always remember what Terry Wogan, who was a big hero of mine, used to say. Mm. He'd say, I don't like to put too much the old effort in. I just relax and take it easy. And I often remember Terry and that. And I've had some of the best ones have been with people where we've never met. I'm trying to think of an example without it being kind of insulting to them that I'd never heard of them. There were one or two, and then it can turn out just great. And then someone like David Duchovny, who I did, I'd never met him. And then what a thrill. He's a big fan of The Trip, so he starts quoting bits of The Trip to me. And that's, you know, I'm still, you know, grounded enough, whatever you want to call it, that's a real thrill, you know, that someone like him and him with me.
And that's how you got a lot of the interviews, right? I mean, Chris Martin loves you because of The Trip. Noel Gallagher quoted you as,
yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah,
favorite, yeah, TV show. Would I Lie to You?
Yeah, I know. Well, Noel's a funny one because Noel, you know, is in this super cool band, super cool guy, and I've never been, you know, concerned with being cool, and as a result, never have been. But every time I've met Noel, we've always got on like a house on fire, and it's a funny thing when you find yourself becoming chums with someone like that when you sort of hit it off.
Yeah.
And I should say, while we're talking about cool, and I don't know how much of this your fans will see and how much they'll hear, but I want you to know that this goatee beard that you see here before you, I want you to know that I am fully aware that it looks ridiculous. I want you to know that I'm fully aware that I know it's dyed. I'm not trying to pull the wool over. Oh, bless you. I had this yesterday because I'm about to do a series through the autumn and we are experimenting with looks. And I did a makeup test yesterday and we dyed it. And I am terrified. I will be saying this at Carfest all weekend. I go, "Hello, I'm Rob Brydon. I know. I just, I don't want people going, oh, bless him. Oh, bless him. He thinks he's getting
trying
away
to
with that.
His jaw." Yeah. Or yeah, like some, yeah, George Michael tribute acts.
Well, you could be George Michael. You could be Tom Jones. You could be Richard Hammond. That's the joke I'll be doing. I'm doing Richard Hammond the musical. I'm always looking up, and that's why I've got this.
You got all your lines worked out for the weekend.
Of course I have.
Listen, in the spirit of Would I Lie to You, I wanted to jump into my first question for you and just warm you up, Rob. Not that you need it. You're an absolute pro. But are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Question number one. In the spirit of Would I Lie to You, let's play a little quick fire round of truth or lies. So, kicking off. Were you at school with Eddie Izzard? Is that the truth or is it a lie?
Truth or lie? Yes. Well, no, not true. But we were at the same school, but we didn't cross over. This was a little school. It was a little charming little prep school in Porthcawl in South Wales called St. John's. And I was there, was very young, and I only have very sort of sepia-toned, idealistic, sensory memories of it, of it all being new, and of my sports kit. And I mean, it was a bit, it was, you know, for Porthcawl, it was a bit, my memory of it is that it was like some kind of English public school, but of course it can't have been. It was in, it was in down there in South Wales. I have a memory of a teacher saying to a boy, "Whack a bath, get off the grass." But I mean,
whack a bath.
But that can't be true. That must be one of my favourite films is Vanilla Sky, and in that at the end he realises that a lot of his supposed memories are just popular culture influences that have you know blended into his memory. And I don't think there can have been a teacher at this Welsh school going whack a bath, get off the grass. So Eddie went there, I think, before me. So no, we weren't there at the same time.
Okay, good to clear up. Okay, my next truth or lie. You once stole Catherine Zeta-Jones's dinner money at school.
Well, there's a lot of truth in this, but I would take issue with the word stole. what happened was she did go to the same school as me at the same time as me. This was a school in Swansea that's no longer there called Dumbarton. And now I'll tell you a strange thing about that. And I'm not a big believer in the paranormal, really, you know, I sort of, I don't know. But I, some years ago, had the most vivid dream one night that I was back in that school and I was walking around its dusty, abandoned classrooms, right? And then the next day, I was on the phone to my oldest friend that had also gone to that school. And he said, oh, you know, they demolished Dumbarton yesterday. So now someone might say that there was a release of energy, you know, a disturbance in the force, you might say, if you're an idiot. So that anyway, that's another thing. Catherine was at that school. I don't know Catherine. I've met her once in all the years since, very briefly. She was going to school, younger than me, of course, and her mum was leaving the school and said, oh, I've forgotten to give Catherine her dinner money. Would you give it to her? I said, yes, I would. I, of course, forgot. And then I was down the road where we used to go at lunchtime to get our chips and whatever, our healthy 1970s lunches. And I spent it on either cola cubes or pineapple chunks because I just put my hand in my pocket and I said, wow, I have money. I don't know how I got this. So I didn't really steal it. But I like to think that the lunch that she missed that day gave her the determination that has seen her conquer the world of entertainment.
Okay, I'm glad we cleared this up. Your fourth child made their way into the world whilst you were on a golf course with Ronnie Corbett.
That's totally true. Yeah.
True!
I did a whole routine about that in my stand-up where I sort of exaggerated slightly. But I played golf. I was very lucky. Ronnie Corbett became a friend of mine. And I smile whenever I think about him. And I was playing golf. And it was Claire, my wife's first child. The received wisdom is that your first child is often late. So there were 9 days to go. So off I went playing golf with Ron. And then Claire phoned and said, I think it's happening. And Ron said, oh, we better get you home. And we got onto the buggy and sped as much as a golf buggy can. So it's true. So then I came home and we'd planned it was going to be an airy fairy water birth at some fancy place. But she was too far gone. And so he ended up being born in this house, two floors under this room, actually. And it was quite a thing. And it gave me a great routine that I that I toured around the country. So it was beneficial in many ways. And then the important thing is you write it down. I mean, I didn't have to write that down because that was so such impact on me. But other things like that, things happen to you and you think, oh, this would be good. What was I telling someone the other day about? There we are. You see, I have forgotten it. I probably didn't write it down. It's very important that you write these things down because you can't just go out on the stage. You can't just go out on the stage and say something very funny happened to me the other day. I can't remember what it was, but take my word for it.
Tell me, how did you become friends with Ronnie Corbett? Because that must have been an absolute moment where once you consider yourself friends, you must go and sit down quietly in a corner and go, I am friends with Ronnie Corbett. I am actually friends with Ronnie Corbett.
Well, it happened because, how did it happen? In the days when the BBC used to throw parties at the BBC, this had been about 2001, 2002, and everyone was there. And I got introduced to the two Ronnies by Ronnie Ancona. So there were three Ronnies.
Three Ronnies!
She knew them. And she introduced me, so I met Ronnie Barker, and I met the one, they were both wonderful, but Ronnie Corbett was always my favourite. I always identified more with him. I mean, the height thing, I suppose, to a degree, but also that he was the softer of the two, and whereas Barker was the technician, the writer, but Ron was the charming one. He was, and I just loved him. And I got introduced to them. And it was when Marion and Jeff and Human Remains were getting some acclaim. And Ronnie Barker said, yes, you're the chap from Human Remains. And I thought, wow, he's seen it. And he said, yes, I've seen four of them. And he said, about Julia, he said, you should tell the girl that does it, she shouldn't always play dowdy. And at the time, I thought, it's funny how you change. At the time, I thought, oh, it's a bit odd saying you've seen four of them. And I thought, oh, telling her what to do. Now I totally am on Ronnie Barker's side. I mean, why the hell should he have seen any of them? So it was an honour that he'd seen any. And that's a very good observation. It's a great thing to say rather than just, oh, yeah, big fan or whatever. Anyway, but I talked a lot more to Ronnie Corbett. And we chatted for quite a while. Then I was on tour with a Keith Barrett live show, and I was going to play the Fairfield Halls in Croydon, which is not far from where they lived. And I was told, oh, Ron's got in touch. He wants to come to the show. I thought, bloody hell. So when I went to do that show, I was on stage doing the sound check, and I was quite nervous because I knew he was going to be there. So I started to do an impression of him telling this joke he told. So I did that. Anyway. We start the show, and I was a bit off. Because I was nervous. And then at some point, I heard his laugh from the darkness. I heard, ah, ah, ah. And I thought, oh, thank God. And I relaxed. And then at the end of the show, he and his wife, Anne, came back to the dressing room. And I got lovely photos of that. And that night, there happened to be a lot of people in. There were people from the DVD company were there. There were people from the promoters. So it was a full dressing room. And I was in a corner with Ron, and I said to him, I was so nervous when I knew you were coming. I said that in the sound check, I did an impression of you doing that joke you used to tell. And he was, right. And I said, you know, the ones who my great uncle Arthur died at the Battle of Little Bighorn. He said he, and people suddenly then in the room could tell that, my God, he's doing an impression of him to him. So it all went quiet around, and they were all looking over to see how he would react. I said, my great uncle Arthur died at the Battle of Little Bighorn. He said he wasn't involved in the fighting. He was camping in a nearby field and popped over to complain about the noise. And as I said the punchline, he joined in with it.
Oh, beautiful.
And that's, we became friends. And then over the years, he came to, when Claire and I got married, he came to the wedding. He came to my 40th birthday party 17 years ago, and we would go out for dinner and la, 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 la. And another good example of this would be, I was doing the stand-up tour then as myself, and it was the tour where I did tell the story about my son Tom being born. And I also talked, because in that story, I say I was playing golf with Ronnie Corbett, and I would do a little bit of him. And as I was doing this, He got up from his seat in the stalls as I was talking, walked along to this. There was a center aisle in this theater. It was the Apollo on Shaftesbury Avenue. And he comes down to the front, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what's he doing? And I thought, well, have I offended him, you know? And he came to the front, and he took off his glasses and gave them to me.
Wow.
For me to put on to do the rest of the impression with. And of course, the audience just went crazy. I mean, it was very special. So that's just one of many experiences that I had with him.
That is just beautiful. And I love the fact that you two came together to tell the gag. That's almost like comedy harmony, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's coming together and harmonising. Beautiful. Oh, I love that. Okay, time for your next question.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, Rob, question number two. You're about to be honoured for a Lifetime Achievement Award for a lifetime of brilliant work. And as you step up to the podium, you clear your throat and you prepare to thank the people without whom this award would simply not be possible. So who are they and why are they so significant?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. Well, first of all, my parents for encouraging me all the time. Mm. Then my drama teacher at Porthcawl Comprehensive, Roger Burnell, who gave me such a brilliant beginning, kind of instilled a work ethic in me, and we're still friends to this day.
Are you?
In those days, he was a very young, dynamic drama teacher. You know, he'd been in his 20s. And he's over the years, I've been back there, and he now runs a huge thing in Wales called It's My Shout that gives people a chance to get involved in the film business. And it's,
wow,
given a start to loads of people.
That's very significant, isn't it? When you get a teacher that gets you and celebrates you, it can be a game changer. It can take you to places in life you would never have got to otherwise.
It's hugely important. The other important thing as a kid is having your thing, whatever that be. And that may be being good at exams, or it could be being good at football, or it could be being good at rugby, or it could be being the funny guy. It could be the person in the school show. You have a thing that gives you an identity. So he would be in there. And then I would say Hugo Blick, very important to me. Julia Davis, very important to me. And, Lord Coogan. He has been hugely, hugely important to me. He really has. So I would say those guys.
And let me just rewind to Julia, because Julia, you knew not as a professional, she wasn't a professional acquaintance. She was a friend first and foremost, right, Julia Davis?
Yeah, but a performing friend first of all, because we met in about 93 or 93. It was when I was about to go off and do the first film I ever appeared in, which was a Sean Connery, Richard Gere film called First Night, about King Arthur. And yeah, and you see me at the beginning. I whenever it's on the telly, I always get tweets, "Oh, just say Rob Brydon." And I play First Villager. In the script, First Villager had two or three lines. And the day before I was due to do it, I was in Waitrose in East Sheen. I mean, things are already going well, you see, with the voiceovers. And my agent phoned on a very early mobile phone, probably a Nokia, and said, bit of news, your lines have been cut. Do you still want to do it? I said, well, of course I do. I mean, it's bloody Sean Connery and Richard Gere. Are you kidding? Of course I want to be in a film with them. So off I went and I did it. I never saw Connery, but Richard Gere was in some scenes I was in. So I got to look at him and observe him at close quarter. And he was suitably dazzling and film star-like. Anyway, why am I telling? Oh, yeah. So it was around this time, because I remember saying, so I met her that we were part of an improv comedy group in Bath and Bristol called More Fool Us. And I remember the first time I met her, we were doing an improv together. And I can still remember it was an outdoor, some kind of festival. And I remember going, oh, yeah, God, we've got something. There was just the dun dun dun. And that was there. And then we did, and then we would do lots of shows. We did lots of shows with that group. And then Ruth Jones joined that group. I knew her from school. We'd been in school at Porthcawl doing musicals together. So we did that. Then I didn't see her for a few years. I mean, it probably in those days, time was longer, wasn't it? So it was probably only a year and a half as she kind of vanished. But we would send... Was it emails in those? I used to have one of those Scion Palm pilots. And could you send an email on that, or could you just...
Only once you'd plugged in and dialed up. Yeah, you had to get onto an Ethernet connection.
Yeah, that's right. So then she we sort of kept in touch. Then she moved to London because she'd lived in Bath. And straight away, she was working with the best people. She and I, at that point, was doing loads of voiceovers, but couldn't get arrested for anything else, really, other than, you know, crappy little things.
You were doing loads of voiceovers, weren't you? Because I remember there was a time when there would be lots of us all sat in reception in various Soho studios. I used to do Argos all the time. I was forever in doing Argos, which was such, I mean, it was bloody brilliant. But there'd be you, Walliams, Matt Lucas, Andrew Lincoln. Yeah. There was like a circuit of us that, you know, and it was like prison. You go, what are you in for?
That's right. That's right. And, yeah, and you'd often work with other voice artists. Now, if I do, I'm doing one from this very room once I've spoken to you. It's so easy now. But in those days, I would often be in a sketch with other actors. I did one with Donald Sinden and Pauline Quirk, where I was Noddy, he was Big Ears, and she was Martha Monkey. And it was directed by Steve Bendelack, who did, I mean, The League of Gentlemen and everything else. And Pete Serafinovich was a big thing on that scene as well. And N. Reitel was just before me. And Kate Robbins was big on that scene. John Glover.
Emily's mum.
And I interviewed Emily on my thing, you know. Anyway, so... yeah. Oh, yeah. And they said,
Julia and Ruth, actually, they became really significant. And you met them sort of in and around the same sort of chapter of your life, I suppose. Two very significant and very talented women that remain really good friends to this day, right?
Well, I've got, there are loads of women. My agents are women. My publicist is a woman. Shall I throw in some other things? My pedicurist, my chakra guru is a woman. My vibe master is a woman. You know, my color scheme palette is a woman. My wife is a woman. Yeah, no, there are lots. I do have a lot of, I don't know, is have I, that must be me, you know, being drawn to that. I don't think it's just coincidence. You know, I've chosen these people, you know, they've not been foisted on me. So, yeah, and I would say...
Rob, when I watched you and Ruth, I read or heard somewhere that you said, when we get together, we can't help but sing. And then when you watch you singing, it is a joyous thing. And there is the... It's like, you know, it doesn't matter if anybody's watching because you two don't care. You're just loving the singing. Would that be an observation? Yeah.
It's such a strange thing, isn't it, to have done what we've done, to have been in this big hit show and also have been at school together, singing in musicals. And then the singing with her is particularly true of that improv group, because when she joined that improv group, we lived in Cardiff, so, and I had a car, so I would drive us to Bath and Bristol, and we would always be singing in the car, and often it was that great Barbara Streisand album with Barry Gibb, Guilty. That's the thing that we would sing, Guilty and What Kind of Fool. Do you know what kind of fool has it apart, even me pain and sorrow? And then he goes, losing you now. And then Barry goes, he comes in with that now and again.
You know what? When you look at a young Barry Gibb and you look at a young John Bishop, I mean...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. That's very, I'd never thought of that. That's very true. Yeah.
You know what? Honestly, Google it afterwards and you'll be like, no way. And then you'll text him and he'll go, you're the 65th billionth person to tell me that. Because I think he gets pointed out a lot. But yes, you're so right. I love his ad-libs and the Barry, the Bee Gees thing. So having listened to your podcast, and I'm so guilty of this myself, I talk a lot about my great musical of George Michael, who I was lucky enough to become friends with.
What was he like? I only met him once, but he seemed like a nice guy.
He was more than that. He was, you know, back in the 90s, I avoided getting to know him. I literally jumped out of a lift so that I didn't have to talk to him because I didn't want him to not be everything I wanted him to be. I loved music so much that I swerved him at a Versace party. Could I sound more like a 90s tosser? Many, many years later, he phoned me live on air to talk to me on Loose Women and left his number. And I was terrified of giving my number to him. I was terrified of taking his number because I thought, if I get drunk and I phone him, I'll make an ass of myself. So I left my number with him and he would often call. And he was everything that I wanted him to be, times a million, with the fun, just a sense of fun and wit and grit, but the biggest heart. So he was all of those things and just leaves a massive gap, I think, in our ears and our hearts. But I hear you talk with the same fandom when you talk about Tom Jones and the Gibb brothers. And I love the fact that we are an hour almost in and we've managed to hit Barry Gibb. It's like Barry Gibb.
Well, I've always loved the melodies, I suppose. I've always loved them as long as I can remember. I love the melodies and
the body of work, though, Rob. Right? No. You know, you could go right back to their early days, and then you go through to the disco, and then through to, I mean, just like the iterations of sound, the artists that they've written for, their harmony. Yeah. I mean, all of it is just so...
Well, you know, you can see footage from That's the Way It Is of Elvis rehearsing words and telling the band, and he's going, oh, I want you to go and steal your heart away, and you go, heart away, and you know, I mean, I would imagine that if you're Barry Gibb, that would give you some pleasure to watch that and see the guy that changed everything telling his band how to do your song, you know. I've always liked, you know, particular acts. I've never been one of those people. Some people say, oh yeah, I used to like going out to see bands. I was never one of those people. I had the people that I liked.
That was it.
So Bruce Springsteen is probably the biggest one for me. And Elvis and Tom Jones, because I've got to know Tom and I've done a few things with him.
Tom's amazing though, isn't he?
He's astonishing.
Tom is just Tom Jones, right? There's no like, oh, I didn't expect him to be like that. He is just like that, isn't he?
What I love is whenever I've done things with him over the years, there'll be people on the crew who have never met him before. And some can maybe sometimes come with, oh, yeah, well, you know, what's he about? And he's never failed to impress everybody around. And they all go away blown away.
He just dazzles, though, doesn't he? You know, so when you and Ruth recorded your number one single, Rob, I mean, how game was Tom Jones? Because he appears in, I would implore people after this podcast, go and Google Islands in the Stream, but watch the full-length version because you see the whole setup and he does the whole comedy routine with you two. But it's right at the end when you're doing Islands in the Stream and then suddenly the voice comes in and he's backlit beautifully and he steals the show, doesn't he?
Oh, yes, he does. He does. Well, that was amazing because we flew to Las Vegas to film it. And so we were jet lagged. We were only there for about 2 days. And when it came to doing that bit where he comes in singing, Ruth and I were just looking at each other. Can you believe this? Can you believe what we're doing? You know, we used to be on the stage of the Grand Pavilion in Porthcawl in the late 70s, early 80s. And then we used to sing in the car together in the early 90s when we were doing that improv group. And now it's 2008 and we are on a stage in Las Vegas. And we spent time with him shooting the stuff for the backstory in a limousine in the desert outside Las Vegas, just sat there for several hours. I think he's in the middle, isn't he? And is that right? Or am I in the middle?
No, Ruth's in the middle. And the gag is that she doesn't want to have anything to do with him because he broke her heart and he wants to win her back because she's clearly the best sex he's ever had and calls her an animal. And
yeah, that's right.
The straight face that she plays it with. I mean, she's something else, Ruth Jones, isn't she? Isn't it exciting to have that level of talent, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's and also to have, just to have known her for so long. It's, yeah, I'm a lucky chap.
Okay, time for my third and final question before you have to jump off and do some voices. My third and final question for you. You seem to be a man that wells up a lot, a man that lives with his emotions very close to the surface, which I love. So I wondered, what are those moments in life that are known to put a lump in your throat and possibly a tear on your cheek?
It's often to do with kids, my children. not just I can walk past a playground without bursting into tears. It'll often be, you know, the kids will often say, dad's filling up. So like on a birthday or something like that, you know. It can be to do with thinking about the passing of time. It's not necessarily at emotional films and things like that. But it's more, my children, really, you know, just a nice moment. I'll feel very proud. And that'll make me sort of want to have a little cry.
I find myself sometimes unable to control a tear or two around applause. Not applause for me. When you're part of a big group experience where everybody, like a standing ovation for a performance, I find incredibly moving. Do you have situations like that that you find very emotive?
No, not really. No, if I'm in an audience and we're giving a standing ovation, of course I'm livid. I tell you what, a funny thing. Jerry Seinfeld had a funny thing about that, where he said, "You know, I think when you're in an audience and they're giving a standing ovation, because I don't think he's a particularly emotional guy," is my impression of him. I never met him, but you know, and people start to stand and you think, oh, you got to stand. And his line is, oh God, are we doing this?
There's a great story on one of your podcasts with Noel Gallagher, who explains that for his 50th, his wife, Sarah, surprised him with a trip to New York because he's a massive Seinfeld fan. And I remember him and Liam butting heads about this because Liam just never saw the funny in Seinfeld. And Noel would be like, what's the matter with you? You heathen. You know, he was such a big fan. So Sarah flew him over to watch a show with Seinfeld and then go backstage and meet him.
Yeah. He told me that story privately and I was just hanging on his every word. Really? And his Bruce story about, you know, meeting Bruce in Ibiza and all that stuff.
The Bruce story was great, wasn't it? Because who was he? It was like, oh yeah, somebody's daughter was going to...
Wasn't it one of the Jaggers or something? Wasn't it Georgia or Jay Jagger, somebody like that? Anyway,
Jagger said, my godfather's going to come and join us for lunch on his boat. And the godfather was Calvin Klein and Bruce was a guest. And
yeah, that's right, yeah.
Noel became very un-Noel for a moment and went, I'm going to make him my friend. And I don't think I've ever seen Noel try to charm anyone.
Yeah, and apparently they got on like a house on fire. It's just all music, isn't it? They're both just, you know, devoted to music.
You love Bruce, though, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do. I do love Bruce, Kate. You're quite right. And I'm very fond of him. And I've been lucky enough to meet him on three occasions. I'm not counting. And the last time, the third, he remembered who I was. So that in my eyes, Kate, is progress. And hopefully at some point there will be formal adoption papers served.
Did that put a tear in your eye?
No, I tell you what it did do though. I don't often ask for selfies. It's very rare that I'd ask somebody for a selfie. I'm not saying big me, you know, I don't do it that often. But I did with him. And as I had, my mate Reese was there with me. And as I handed Reese my phone, he said, oh, Bobby, it was hilarious. He said, your hand was shaking.
I like the fact that he calls you Bobby.
Yeah.
Rob, thank you so much for your time. It's never not fascinating talking to you. And I'm really looking forward to snuggling up next to you tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, this is just the beginning, Kate. This is just the beginning. I'll be in tent number 4. Knock quietly.
I'll bring a flask.
Oh, God, I shudder to think what will be in it, but bring the flask.
Thank you so, so much, Rob. And if you've enjoyed this chat, don't forget to sign up to or download Rob's podcast. It's available only on Spotify and is well worth the listen.
Well, I can only echo what Kate said.
A huge thanks to my guest this week, the incredible Rob Brydon. And if you want to see him do something fabulous at Carfest next year, then head over to carfest.org right now to keep an eye out on when you can get your tickets. And all proceeds go to supporting a number of children's charities. So far, over £20 million has been raised, which has done incredibly good work. And of course, if you want more great chat with more legendary comedians and actors, and look no further than our wine cellar, where you'll find vintage episodes in the back catalogue with the likes of Daisy May Cooper, Keith Lemon, Jordan Thompson, Jason Fleming, Craig Charles, Griff Rhys Jones, James Acaster, Anna Gamble, Alan Cumming, Hannah Waddingham, Kerry Godleyman, and so many more. My thanks to you, as always, for your company, and to Maria Nibbs, who produces this with the Yahoo Studios team alongside me. Editing is by Andy Eggson, and of course, our music, as always, comes courtesy of Andy Bell. We'll be back next Friday with more great guests. Until then, thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.